back to another edition of the Young Turks. It's Wednesday, right? Yeah, I think it's Wednesday.
It's okay. Been a long week.
Halfway through the week, lots of news to get to. I'm Johnny Arola, Anna Kasparian here once again. JR, your chair is over. What are you doing, man?
I'm doing the same thing I would do over there. I'm just going to play on this iPad for a couple hours.
For like a long time? I occasionally look over and I see plants and or zombies on his screen. But no, JR Jackson is going to be joining us, which is awesome. Because
I already have.
You were already here. Yeah.
It's about time you're on the main desk.
I don't think a lot of people know that you don't just cut the videos, but you also produce for the show. You are one of the main people that helps us craft the first hour rundown every day.
John and I get into fights pretty regularly in production meetings in the morning.
Not regularly, yesterday.
I pitch good stories. He says, no, let's not do good stories.
Yeah, or I say
yes. That's exactly what happened.
I throw it away. It's not too good stories. It sounds weird when you say it that way, but we do have a lot of news to get to today. Let's see. I mean, we've got updates on whether we might get further involved in Syria. We've got concentration camps in Chechnya, so that's going to be a pretty dark story there. We've got an interesting take on what you should do on Earth Day that I hadn't previously considered. And then the Alabama Senate has given a new power to a church in Alabama that is batshit crazy. And I don't think it's constitutional, but they've already done it. So we'll get to that in the latter half of this hour. But with that, I'm gonna jump into some of these quick news hits. Canada opened up its yearly commercial seal hunts 2 weeks early this year. Tens or possibly hundreds of thousands of seals are expected to be killed just in Canada just this year. In fact, individual hunters are allowed to kill up to 250 seals on any given day, which just puts it puts the scale into your mind. I've seen photos that they just walk up to the seals and shoot them in the head. They don't flee from humans. And yet it's allowed. Understand that demand for these products is thankfully going down, and 40 nations, including the United States, have already banned trade in products produced through these commercial seal hunts.
So many limitations, 250 a day. How do you keep track of that?
How do you do that in one day? But they do, and it's absolutely barbaric.
They're just looking to seal the deal.
That's
I'm sorry.
Playing the role of Cenk Uygur today.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, it's a very sad story, but nonetheless, continue.
Further, it was revealed last night that the FBI actually obtained a FISA warrant last summer to monitor Trump advisor Carter Page, alleging that he knowingly engaged in clandestine intelligence activities on behalf of the Russian government. Not just that he in effect helped them or coordinated, met with them, but that he knowingly engaged in these activities. Apparently, the file that they gave to FISA when trying to get that warrant was inches thick. That's basically at this point all that we know. But today, Page was on with Jake Tapper, and he refused to say whether he has met with the FBI about this. And he refused to say who originally linked him up with the Trump campaign at all. So all of a sudden, his lips are very sealed after this information has come out. But this is just a reminder that despite the fact that we might be going to war in Syria, these investigations are still ongoing. Finally, since we initially reported on the protests in Venezuela on yesterday's show, two teenagers, a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old, have died in the western state of Lara during the spreading unrest. And there have been new waves of arrests too. And that's just in the past 16 or so hours. So serious situation. Hopefully people will continue to do the great reporting, including the photojournalists that we talked about on the show yesterday. But as was the case yesterday, mainstream media not talking about it very much. Anyway, let's turn back to the United States. In an interview with Fox Business last night, Donald Trump talked about our future potential actions in Syria, whether we're going to get involved. And depending on which sentence you pay attention to, we are not going to be going in, or we very much might be going in. Let's try to decipher it after watching this clip.
I understand we're not going into Syria because, you know, there were some questions. Nikki Haley is doing a great job. Rex is doing a fantastic job, our Secretary of State. General McMaster, fantastic. But if you add it all up and if they take every little word, they'll say, oh, they're different. Just so you understand, we're not going into Syria. But when I see people using horrible, horrible chemical weapons, which they agreed not to use under the Obama administration, but they violated it.
They said they got rid of them.
Hey, look, what I did should have been done by the Obama administration a long time before I did it. When I looked at the pictures on any show or any newspaper, but especially when you see them on television, and you see these beautiful kids that are dead in their father's arms, or you see kids gasping for life, and you know they're, it's over. It's over for them. They're hosing them down, hundreds of them. When you see that, I immediately called General Mattis. I said, what can we do? And they came back with a number of different alternatives, and we hit them very hard. Now, are we going to get involved with Syria? No. But if I see them using gas and using things that, I mean, even some of the worst tyrants in the world didn't use the kind of gases that they used. And some of the gases are unbelievably potent. So when I saw that, I said, we have to do something.
Donald Trump, I'm just going to say, because I had to listen to him. When he's speaking, I listen to Barack Obama a lot too. And when Barack Obama speaks, you have to slow down your brain because he goes really slowly. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, you know, he wants to think about what he's doing or what he's about to say, make sure that it comes out the correct way, make sure people don't misinterpret what he's saying.
He was very measured.
Yes. Mm-hmm. When Donald Trump speaks, there's a bunch of things they told him to say or things he feels he needs to get to. And in his throwing it all out, he gets sidetracked.
Mm-hmm. With his own mind.
Yeah,
he sidetracks himself.
With his own talking point, his internal talking point that takes him off the original talking point. Then he comes back to it again and doesn't realize how much he contradicts himself. It's like if he's following Waze maps and it says turn left at Main Street, he'll turn left at Main Street. Then he'll make a right at 7th just because he felt like it. And you go, we're lost now.
Driven by his need to use hyperbole. Like he'll start to make a point, and then he wants to say how bad chemical weapons are in a way that makes it seem like he's never thought about chemical weapons before.
Yeah.
And so then he follows that train and forgets what he was talking about. And so, look, chemical weapons, absolutely horrible, illegal, you can't use them. But if he's saying we're not going to get involved, and only the U.S. government gets to fire 59 cruise missiles at a country and then say we're not involved there.
That's right.
For some reason. Mm-hmm. But then you say, well, if they use these weapons or if they do something really bad, then we might get involved. If I'm worried about us going into Syria, then that set of statements doesn't make me feel better about the future.
And he doesn't know what he just finished saying. So if you ask again, what does that mean? The follow-ups that never come, I'm sorry. The follow-ups that never come is, so what does that mean? You just said two different things. He'd go, no, I didn't, fake news.
Well, he also, in the beginning of that answer, said that you'll listen to Nikki Haley and Rex Tillerson, and the media just pretends as though the two of them are saying two completely different things. But they're not. They're saying the same. No. They said two completely different things.
Yeah, we broke it down.
We broke it down on the show yesterday. Nikki Haley said that the intent was to go after regime change. Rex Tillerson said the exact opposite of that. And so there's no... I don't know if they have communication with one another. I don't know if they're united on what their policy ideas are. All I know is there are conflicting messages in the media right now coming from members of his administration, from people who work closely with him. And also, I just want to make a quick point about how, yes, I do agree that chemical weapons are horrendous. But you know what else is horrendous? Attacking or targeting civilians intentionally in any way, killing them, injuring them, and essentially doing what Assad has been doing with the help of the Russians, okay? Yeah. Civilians have been dying because they've been targeted by Assad and, you know, his regime, in the middle of this civil war. And so why is it that all of a sudden you care because of the chemical weapons? You didn't see all these videos before. You didn't see the images in the media of all of these innocent children who have been suffering as a result of Assad. All of a sudden you care. I think it's very, very strange. And also, if you care about civilians so much and innocent people getting hurt so much, well, maybe you shouldn't have amplified the drone strikes that the Obama administration was doing. More civilians are dying under the Trump administration. Now, what Obama was doing was wrong with the drone strikes, and we criticized him for that a great deal. But Trump, again, has accelerated that.
Yeah.
And I don't know, why does he care about those civilians?
And because those pictures aren't on TV, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess, which is for some reason, seeing the picture on TV, he said, is worse than when you see it in a newspaper. I don't really understand.
Yeah.
And yeah, like you should care about the civilian deaths. He obviously hasn't for years. There were reports today that Russian planes dropped white phosphorus on civilian areas of Syria today. Now, technically, phosphorus is a mineral, not a chemical, but still pretty horrible when you look at what it does to the human body. Now, I do want to move on just a little bit, though, because the way that they talk about this is going to get even weirder. Because in the continuing interview with Maria Bartiromo, she wants to find out, what it was actually like when he made the call. Like back when they made the call to go after bin Laden, there's all those pictures. It was a really tense situation. I guess they're trying to get that going again. But look at the emotion on the face of the two people in this interview as they're discussing this happy little story of theirs.
When you were with the president of China, you're launching these military strikes. Was that planned? How did that come about that it's happening right then? Because right there you're saying, a reminder, here's who the superpower in the world is.
You have no idea how many people want to hear the answer to this. I have watched speculation for 3 days now on what that was like.
When did you tell this?
But I'll tell you.
Before dessert?
But I will tell you. Only because you've treated me so good for so long, I have to tell you, right? I was sitting at the table. We had finished dinner. We're now having dessert. And we had the most beautiful piece of chocolate cake that you've ever seen. And President Xi was enjoying it. And I was given the message from the generals that the ships are locked and loaded. What do you do? And we made a determination to do it. So the missiles were on the way. And I said, Mr. President, let me explain something to you. This is during dessert. We've just fired 59 missiles, all of which hit, by the way, unbelievable, from, you know, hundreds of miles away, all of which hit. Amazing.
Unmanned.
Brilliant. It's so incredible. It's brilliant. It's genius.
Was this during dessert?
I think it was during dessert. Yeah. We should eat there. I hear it's a beautiful cake. He has to do the Trump thing, the all of which hit. All of which hit from really far away. Yeah, it's impressive technology, I guess.
One of them hit.
Then she asked, are they unmanned? Yeah, the missiles are unmanned. Yeah.
The whole interaction
I think that
was
when
crazy.
We stopped manning missiles, I think that that was a big step forward for human rights. It was a cruel practice back in the day. But anyway.
It's amazing to target this big empty airfield and have all missiles hit an empty, useless space. It's amazing, our technology.
Yeah. Well, it's just, it's a weird Trump thing that they have to do. But yeah, they're accurate missiles. That's good. I have no problem with that. It's the look on her face. So what was it like when you asked? It's like, someone already pointed this out, but it's like getting someone to tell you how they first asked like their now wife to the prom or something.
I wonder if that
was. Who the hell cares? This is real life we're talking about.
I know, but I wonder if that was an interview strategy by her. You know, because I think that if he senses some sort of warmness from the person interviewing him, mm-hmm. he's more likely to open up. I don't know. I'm just maybe giving her the benefit of the doubt when I don't need to. But like the ad for the cake was insane. I mean, we need some tort reform here.
Okay. Oh my God. That whole thing was leading up to tort reform.
By the way, so this, I think it indicates a little bit also people who would normally oppose these types of things, like with the Brian Williams things and Fareed Zakaria. Mm-hmm. When we see American power. We're born with that belief, man. When your kids are 3 years old and they're watching the 4th of July fireworks go off, eventually do you point out to them, what are these fireworks, like what are they signifying in your mind?
Right.
A war.
Yeah.
That we won, and these are our bombs. The bombs, it's in the national anthem, in case you forgot. When you listen to baseball games, you don't listen. But so we're born and bred with this American bombs, no matter what. So her question originally was, did you tell that president of China, that president, who the real superpower is in this world because we launched some missiles? That is all we care about, man. Yeah.
That's a really good point. And I guess we're so conditioned by that it didn't even really register with me. And I'm usually pretty critical of those types of interactions.
Yeah, and look, we've gone over the past 2 years quite a bit that Trump has previously written about, you know, how you sell this brand of yourself and how you build yourself up. I mean, does anyone think that it's a coincidence that they couldn't have ended the dinner and then talked to Donald Trump? Mm-hmm. No, they kept the dinner going so that he could get that message while speaking with the Chinese president, because he thinks it's gonna make him look more impressive in front of the Chinese president. That's politician 101. It's definitely Donald Trump 101.
Guess what the Chinese president's state media said when he got home? Oh, a weak, strong man trying to flex his muscles. I guess that worked.
So they were able to see that. Now, we want to show you a little bit more because there's an odd slip up in the next section of the interview that I think says a lot about Donald Trump.
So what happens is, I said, we've just launched 59 missiles heading to Iraq.
Well, you headed to Syria.
Yes, heading toward Syria. And I want you to know that. Because I didn't want him to go home. We're almost finished. It was a full day in Palm Beach. We're almost finished. And what does he do? Finish his dessert and go home. And then they say, you know, the guy you just had dinner with just attacked the
country. How did he react?
So he paused for 10 seconds. And then he asked the interpreter to please say it again. I didn't think that was a good sign. And he said to me, anybody that uses gases, you could almost say, or anything else, but anybody that was so brutal and uses gases to do that to young children and babies, it's okay.
He agreed.
He was okay with it. He was okay.
Can I donate money to a cause that he's in favor of to get him to say chemical weapons rather than gases? To talk about it as if you understand what they actually are. But yeah, so she leans in. What was it like when you told him? That's creepy. We're talking about the possible beginning of a war with Syria. Mm-hmm. And just the eagerness. I don't do a lot of interviews. Maybe it makes you go crazy. But that was a really way to describe it. And of course, we can't pass over the fact that he said Iraq when he meant Syria. Maybe that's an understandable mistake. I noticed that he got the cake right on the first try. And he didn't say it was a cobbler. Oh shit, sorry, it was actually chocolate. He got that, he nailed it.
It was, remember just, how tall it was a beautiful was. Cake though, so how could you forget?
And he finished his dessert, the president of China.
Yeah, and the fact, I mean, you're talking about Syria, say that it's Syria. It's that it doesn't matter. And he says, you know, what I did is what Obama should have done a long time ago. He should have done what I just did. He should have fired 59 missiles at an airfield, blown up a couple of planes, largely not accomplished anything since they can still take off from the airfield. That would have saved the conflict in Syria a couple of years ago. Does anyone believe that? The actions they take militarily, it doesn't make any difference what actually happens, what they actually accomplish. All it is sending a message. Sending a message to your base, sending a message to the media, sending a message to the politicians in your party, in the Senate, and the House. How are they gonna interpret this? It doesn't fucking matter what you actually accomplish or what consequences it might have.
Right.
It's all about just sending messages. It's all just fucking war IMs.
So sending a message is fine if that message resonates in a way that's productive, right? And so did that message convince Assad to stop being so brutal to civilians? No, as you mentioned, the white phosphorus attacks happened recently, and he will continue attacking civilians, and he will continue being as aggressive as possible against anyone who opposes him and his regime. And so, look, my biggest issue is that there is no well thought out plan or strategy. It was a sign of aggression coming from the United States. And you need to follow that up with foreign policy. And I can't even believe I'm saying this. I almost wish that it would be foreign policy that's detailed and maybe I don't even agree with, right? But at least there's a plan. At least there's some competence, or they show that they're communicating with one another. They're doing the intelligence briefings and they have some plan in place. But right now it doesn't seem like that's the case. And you have all these different people spreading conflicting messages in the media.
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot more that I would like to cover on this. We are going to have to go to our first break, though. When we come back, a lot more to discuss the concentration camps in Chechnya, the absolutely brutal persecution of members of the LGBT community going on in Chechnya right now. Thankfully, some great reporting coming out of that area and much more to get to. Tweet us at hashtag TYT Live what you think about the stories we've discussed so far. And we'll be back in just a few. Welcome back to the first hour of the Young Turks, everybody. John and Anna and JR. Fun little mini power panel going on. That did not get past you guys. Somebody noticed it.
What is miniature about this power panel?
Yeah, I think
we're
pretty big.
Do you want me to say? No. Eliza Baxter said, I see what you did there, TYT, dropping a sneaky power panel midweek with JR Jackson. I'll allow it. In fact, it's encouraged.
Oh.
Ooh, okay, maybe we'll do it again. And then Ashley pointed out a point I meant to make. I tweeted about it, but I forgot to mention it. Couldn't help but notice Trump doubling down on the Sean Spicer Hitler comment.
I know, we were going to make that point. We went too long. That's the thing that happens.
He didn't say Hitler. So it turns out Sean Spicer stupider than Donald Trump. But it's the same point. Yeah. They had to have had that conversation together.
Or Trump watched Sean Spicer in the morning.
And then decided to use the line?
And just, it wasn't, maybe he didn't pay attention, didn't know, realize the explosion that happened right afterwards.
He's
like,
possible.
That's a good point.
It's possible. And then Billy Runaway makes a great point. Says, what was it like when you told him? Jon Stewart would have been leaning on his elbows with his fist supporting his chin. He used to do that.
Yeah.
I miss Jon Stewart, damn it. Smooth also making a more complex point. At this point, the plan for a peaceful Syria probably involves actions progressives won't like. That's true, assuming that there is any plan that we can identify as likely to produce a peaceful Syria. I don't know that actually exists. I think that almost any path forward is I think objectively humans should not like it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even know what the right solution is. All I know is the Trump administration doesn't know what they're doing, and I'm not encouraged by that.
Yeah, and I don't trust them. Yeah. You can trust different. You should not have blanket trust of any administration, but you can certainly trust some more than others. Also, by the way, I believe the Webby voting is still going on.
Yes.
TYT up for an important Webby. So you can Google that. You can go vote. It would be awesome for us to win that. We've won it a couple times before. Let's keep moving on up.
Yeah.
By winning that one, and we can only do it thanks to you guys. Unfortunately, we do have to now transition to an incredibly serious and tragic story. Last week, we reported on the rounding up and eventual apparent murder of up to 100 members of the LGBT community in Chechnya. Since then, more details have been revealed, both by human rights organizations working in that area of the world, and also by the Russian newspaper Novaya Gazeta. And apparently, what's going on in Chechnya right now is actually worse than we thought a week ago. Now, in response to the charges that people had been being rounded up and either being disappeared or found murdered, the response from some of the officials in the area, even back then, was offensive to the extreme. A spokesperson for the leader there said, "You cannot arrest or repress people who just don't exist in the republic," saying that we can't be harassing or discriminating against or murdering gay individuals because no one in Chechnya would be gay. So that's where they're starting from. And that idea is actually out there. There's an activist, Keira Saratova, who said something very similar. In our Chechen society, any person who respects our traditions and culture will hunt down this kind of person without any help from authorities and do everything to make sure that this kind of person does not exist in our society.
So they're pretty transparent about
it. Yeah. That's a rough place for people in this community. And they're very open about their not just discrimination, but the murderous intent behind their discrimination. But again, it apparently is more organized and more pervasive than we thought last week. It's thought that the men that are being rounded up are being held in camps in the town of Argun. And a representative for the Russian LGBT network said, "Gay people have been detained and rounded up, and we're working to evacuate people from the camps, and some have now left the region." And there's even worse details. Those who have escaped said they are detained in the same room and people are kept all together, around 30 or 40. They are tortured with electric currents and heavily beaten, sometimes to death. At this point, we don't know what the total death toll will be, since again, some of the people's bodies are hidden or they're dragged off and not found later on. Abuses allegedly included men being taken outside and beaten several times a day, having their hands electrocuted and being forced to sit on bottles. Now, there is a small amount of international reporting going on about this situation right now. It hasn't reached the highest levels of US media, unfortunately, and tragically. All too often, abuses against gay individuals, especially in other countries, don't rise to the level of a lost plane or anything like that. But some people are taking notice. If you can bring up this next tweet, it's going to show you Human Rights Campaign trying to pressure the Secretary of State to talk about this issue, since he's meeting with Vladimir Putin right now, an incredibly influential state in terms of its ability to influence what goes on in Chechnya. And Amnesty International also launched a petition demanding that Chechnya stop abducting and killing gay men, saying the Chechen government won't admit that gay men even exist in Chechnya, let alone that they ordered what the police call preventive mopping up of people they deem undesirable. And so that is about as dark a situation as you can have. And it's going on right now, in some part perhaps helped by the fact that people are justifiably curious about what's going to happen in Syria and perhaps in North Korea as well.
I understand it's hard to follow everything in the world. There's human rights violations all over the world in many countries. And you know, I'm sure statements come out. I looked even that our US State Department also had a statement on the 7th of this month about it, condemning it, saying we would hope that the government officials here would maybe remedy the situation, not allow all these things. So it's not like it's not on the radar. Mm-hmm. The head of the State Department knows it. So when Rex Tillerson goes over there and speaks and meets with Putin, it's on the radar. It's just it's not a priority here.
Yeah.
So it kind of matches up. So I get not always saying the most frontward forward thinking thing on everything that comes out, because we get tweets, I don't know if you guys do, from people that say, you guys haven't been paying attention to this horrific tragedy in this part of the world or to this group of people, how are you not going to get to it? And it's a little hard from our little perspective, but if you're running a government of what we call the strongest and best country in the world,
yeah,
you have a little bit of a
some priority to get to these things.
And more people, yeah.
Or maybe someone asked them about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Rex, you're going over there, are you going to speak about this?
Yeah, well, what's interesting is the type of influence a country like Russia has in policies like this that you're seeing popping up in other countries, right? And so it all kind of started back in 2012 with Russia passing anti-gay propaganda laws. And, you know, on its face, for people who aren't paying attention, it doesn't seem like a big deal because, like, oh, we're just trying to keep, you know, sexual information from getting to kids. But it was really about discriminating against the gay community. And also, there's another component to all of this that I don't think people really understand is going on. You can just simply be accused of being gay.
Yeah.
And they will target you. And that's what scares me the most. All of this scares me. The fact that someone could be persecuted like this due to their sexual orientation to the point where they're physically harmed, maybe in some cases even murdered. This is the kind of stuff that the US has a responsibility and an obligation to do something about. And so we play this weird game when it comes to our foreign policy where we pick the winners and losers, where we pick the countries that we pretend like we care about, when in reality, what we really want to do is flex our military muscle and make our weapons manufacturers wealthy. There's very little diplomacy, there's very little action taken, you know, maybe in the form of sanctions against countries like this when this type of behavior happens, right?
Exactly.
And so that's what we need to focus on. I don't know if the Trump administration will ever be sophisticated enough to understand all of the ramifications of, you know, the policies that we're seeing in other countries and what we need to do to stop it or encourage the good policies. But things are not good right now. We see a very right-wing wave, not only here in the United States, but throughout the world.
Yeah, exactly. And so my request to the audience would be, in terms of this issue, to the extent that you can, put pressure on the government to do something about it. But speaking more broadly, I mean, one of the reasons that we try to put a little bit more focus, shed a little bit more light on a situation like in Chechnya or yesterday in Venezuela, and again, as JR alluded to, one of the reasons that was brought to our attention was through viewers sending us links and giving information, offering to put us in touch with opposition leaders in Venezuela, which we're going to try to do. But my fear is that considering the last year in America, how dark things are becoming and how much the threat that we're facing right now, I'm worried that having to deal with our own stuff here domestically is going to have a lot of us put our blinders on and become a little bit more myopic, a little bit more focused on what's happening here. And I'm very worried that progressivism is a set of values that's broad and expansive. It's about humanity. It's about all of these underlying values. But I fear that in the past year, it's started to be constrained. And the number of issues that some of the most high-profile progressives talk about and think about, understandably, considering the rise of Trump, is starting to get more specific and more limited. And I'm worried that we're going to leave a lot of people on the wayside if we continue down this path. But there's stuff going on in our country and around the world that is dark, that's affecting a lot of communities that are extremely vulnerable. And we can't allow them to be cast off to the side while we rightfully fight the battles that we need to focus on
here. And I know this particular story isn't directly related to anything happening in America, as we've outlined, obviously. But I'm just, you mentioned progressives. Many progressives who were okay with the election of Donald Trump saying it's going to bring on a lib revolution because we're going to see so many atrocities. These are some atrocities. Again, it's not like Trump administration is carrying these things out, but these are atrocities and people are dying.
Yeah.
So is this bringing forth a liberal revolution?
No, I think.
Do you want to see more things like this happen and get ignored across the world and be like, yes, death? Just remember what you're cheering for and what you said, I'm voting for him because I want to bring on a lib revolution. This is what that is comprised of.
I think what this administration is doing, unfortunately, is not bringing about a liberal revolution. I mean, who knows? Maybe it's too early on and we're misjudging. But I think what it's doing is desensitizing us to people that are slightly better than Trump, but still horrendous. Or policy ideas that are still horrendous, but slightly better than Trump's ideas or his administration's ideas. We can't settle for something slightly better. And I'm worried that we might, just because people might get desperate.
Well, why don't we actually transition? Because you brought up something when you were talking about our ability to deploy our vast, you know, the Department of State and all that, and we can address all of these things. There might actually be reason to believe that at this point we can't. And so we're going to try to explain that right now. So The White House and much of the rest of the executive branch right now is actually suffering from hundreds of incredibly important high profile vacancies and positions that need to be filled. And if you ask Donald Trump, he says that that is in no way his fault, and he's going to explain it in this clip.
I am waiting right now for so many people.
You're understaffed.
Hundreds and hundreds of people. And then they'll say, why isn't Trump doing this faster? You can't do it faster because they're obstructing. They're obstructionists. So I have people, hundreds of people that we're trying to get through. I mean, you see the backlog, can't get them through. Yeah. And then the newspapers will say Trump doesn't get them through. Well, it's nothing to do with me. Statutorily, you have to go through this process. So it's been a lousy process. It's taken a long time to get my cabinet done, and as you know, it's not even done now. This is record stuff. You know, we're talking about records in terms of time, and it's very sad. A lot of times I'll say, well, why doesn't so-and-so have people under him or her? The reason is because we can't get them approved.
Okay, unfortunately for him, to quote Donald Trump, that's fake news. That's not actually fake news, but he's lying there. So he said he can't get it done because of those damned obstructionists, and he just says they. He might be referring to both Democrats and Republicans because he has had his fights with them. But as of April 7th, the White House had put forward 24 nominations to fill 533 positions that require Senate approval.
Hundreds.
Not hundreds, 24. Of those 24, 22 have already been confirmed. So it doesn't seem like if they're trying to obstruct, they're not doing a very good job of it at this point. They let through almost everyone. You simply haven't put it forward. And I know that you've been talking about how you've read that in sort of a break from past precedent, he's requiring his personal approval for every one of these nominations, which sounds good, actually. It looks like he's doing work in that case. But if he's only been able to come up with 24 names in 85 days of his administration, that's not a good record. It might take 12, 16 years to fill all these spots.
I would encourage you to read this article from Politico about all the reasons why. It's so many layers. So, and there's so much irony involved because we're talking about red tape and government bureaucracy and micromanaging. And then he started with the hiring freeze when he first came in, all non-military hires. But then when he put things into place, every story goes back to he just doesn't know how it works. So Chris Christie was in place as part of the transition team to set up all these positions. Yeah. Hundreds to 1,000 people were lined up that would fit. He got rid of Christie, as we all know, right at the inauguration or right afterwards, and put Mike Pence in place because the vice president's job is to do that. So when he came in, he does nothing. And then people put in place the head of the presidential or White House personnel department who's never done it before. He doesn't have enough staff members. The people he's put in place have been dispatched to all the other cabinet position members to oversee these people. Rex Tillerson, Pruitt, all these guys are being overseen by random people who've never done it before, because they've also never done this before either, to oversee their hiring practices, so they have nobody underneath them. And actually Pruitt, at one point, he's upset that he can't even, the EPA director, in case you don't know, he's upset because he doesn't even have enough approved personnel to carry out Donald Trump's agenda that would rewrite Obama's climate change regulations. Yeah. So it ends up shooting yourself in the foot. The layers in this article
agenda,
for how many different people who don't know what the hell they're doing,
and then
are put in positions to tell other people who don't know what the hell they're doing, is outrageous. And they fall into the three factions of Kushner, Priebus, and Bannon, and the fourth of Trump, who also is looking at every week they have a meeting. I'm sorry, I was amazed when I read this. Every week they have a meeting where they sit and he goes through, binders of people, not just women. And he goes to me and says, no, they were wrong to me during the election. They were wrong to me during the campaign.
I don't like their
haircut.
They
said one thing. And a very specific group of these people that he doesn't approve are always national security people who know how to protect us and keep us from being killed. None of them are in place because all of them said, this guy is crazy.
Well, and remember during the transition when they were touring, they were walking around the White House, they asked, so how many of these people are going to be staying on under Trump? None of them, you idiot. Those are Obama's employees. You have to hire new ones. They had no idea. And look, there's good side, bad side to this. If you're a progressive and everything that you've seen out of his executive order scares you, then the idea that he doesn't have enough people in the EPA or in the State Department to get it done, that sounds like a good thing. And in a lot of ways, it might be. But the government does have to function. It has to do routine work just to keep things going. Some of it is partisan or ideological, but some of it's not. A government is very complicated. There's a lot of moving parts. And if they don't have the people to oversee it, then there can be ripple effects that we may never consciously know are there, but can do a lot of damage across the country. And that's why this should scare even strong progressives.
So I just want to quickly add that we all know, based on the explanations that were given and also by common sense, that obstructionism is not the reason why the White House is short-staffed and that there's so many vacancies. We know that it's because of incompetence and all of that. But the way Maria I can't even say her last. It's so hard to say her last name. The way Maria Bartiromo dealt with that part of the interview, and honestly, the majority of the interview, was ridiculous. Because what was her follow-up question? You have all the cards in your deck, right? You have Republicans controlling Congress, Republicans controlling the Senate, right? You have no problem getting what you want. You are incompetent, right? Now, I'm not telling her that she should tell him that you're, you know, I think you're incompetent, President Trump, but she should at least follow it up with, hey, but isn't it true that the Senate is controlled by Republicans? Isn't it true that the majority of the people that you want do get confirmed by the Senate? Like, why is it that she will not follow up? And that's the part that drives me crazy.
Because earlier, come back. As we saw another part of the interview, he said, I'll give you this story about how I talked to President Xi, because you've been so nice to me.
Yeah, I know. That's why the entire time she's like, tell me more.
I'm going to be honest. If somebody interviewed me like that, I'd come back immediately. Mm-hmm. Anyway, why don't we turn to one more story before we take our next break? This one is a little bit of a fun one. On Earth Day, typically, we celebrate Mother Earth and nature, maybe animals or something like that. But one Koch-backed think tank says that instead we should celebrate fossil fuels. Yes, they've been left out for too long. And so this Independence Institute put out this email saying, Enviros, these are environmentalists, celebrate by planting trees, but they never celebrate the trucks that deliver the trees, or the gas that powers that truck, or the plastic handles of the shovels they use. Well, perhaps they use wooden handles. Have you considered that? But yeah, they're not thinking about the fact that they have to drive to that place. Now, some of them might be driving electric vehicles. We should acknowledge that. They also go on to say, this is Amy Cook, executive VP and director, says fossil fuels seem to get left out of the Earth Day celebration. As an energy feminist, pro-choice in energy sources, I feel it's important to have hydrocarbons equally represented.
What does energy feminist mean? I don't understand what energy.
You know what it means? It means middle finger to you, you lib. That's all that it means.
It means that I'm going to try to trick you by using, I don't know, some liberal terminology.
It's clever. But
no, it's not clever at all.
It's a little clever.
No, if anything, I feel like conservatives who are inclined to be in favor of the type of messaging she's trying to sneak by would hear the word feminist. They'd be like,
Time's going to head explode.
Maybe she's actually working in our favor. Maybe because of this, all of a sudden, conservatives will be like, we're against fossil fuels. They're tied to feminists. Yeah. We hate feminists. So let's. Anyway, but
that
this is absurd. We've been celebrating fossil fuels ever since, not Americans, but humans discovered fossil fuels. Like, fossil fuels continue to dominate our energy source, or continue to be used as our dominant energy source. So she's insane. But
she's got a little bit more of that framing, saying people and organizations support us because of the work we do, including being energy agnostic. Oh, so there, you atheists might also like fossil fuels.
Conservatives,
we encourage innovation instead of overregulation. It's actually kind of liberating because we aren't boxed in by an either-or cynical choice paradigm. So that is freeing.
This is her terminology. I see what you're saying, Anna, I accept your explanation.
Well, thank you.
But it's one of those things where they think they're so used to talking to conservatives, or at least this particular block of conservatives, that will listen to whatever they're saying. Mm-hmm. They say, we'll throw some terminology and we'll bring in a couple of these enviros in that will listen to us now. All we need is terms that they like and they'll like us. Mm-hmm. There's a second level of thinking that they don't think that enviros has, that may, I guess, liberals, progressives have, that they go, as long as we hit them with enough terms, she thinks she's being smart, they're going to be like, oh, she said atheist.
It works.
Or agnostics.
I support her.
Yes,
I
you're all on board. But it's, again, you're too dumb to realize that people don't just think to that small, very thin level of intelligence. Number two, I mentioned enviros. I'm sorry, this is my speculation. You know how they start on folks, I think Karl Rove's The Factions of the Party, where it said Democrat, the Democrat Party, because it sounds like a rat. I feel like in virals, it's, you want to call them viruses almost.
Yeah, it does sound like virus. Yeah,
it's a negative tone.
We'll track
to
if
the
that
term.
Comes up more often. Mm. There's one other aspect of this I want to get to, though, because as I said, this is a Koch-backed group. It's not exclusively funded by the Koch brothers, but they've given over $100,000 to this think tank. And a lot of people say that people who deny climate change are being short-sighted. They're not planning ahead. Think about what will happen to the Earth. But it turns out it's not true, because the Koch brothers actually have funded other groups who are looking ahead to the effects of climate change. So they had an exhibition. The message of the exhibition, funded by one of the Koch brothers, was that the human race had evolved for the to be better in response to previous environmental challenges and would adapt in the face of climate change too. An interactive game suggested that if the climate on Earth became intolerable, people might build underground cities and develop short, compact bodies or curved spines so that moving around in tight spaces will be no problem. So they're planning ahead, man. They're planning for you to become a mole man and live underground and burrow.
Is this a joke? Or did this really?
That actually happened. It was in a book from 2016.
Like this is, I mean, I'm going to say it now in case it happens. Whatever Onion article this originated from.
We kept checking. We kept checking. If it's fake news, it is very cleverly disguised fake news. It was published on Think Progress.
As we have this right over our heads.
Underground cities. Underground cities. Climate change is great.
Cool. Yeah, exactly.
Underground cities. Fun.
Yeah. Oh, look at that girl and her short, curved spine.
Oh, my God.
I like curves in spines. Anyway, we do have to take our second break. I think you probably have some comments on these past stories. Tweet us to hashtag TYT Live. When we come back, we're going to get to that church story.
Yes.
What new power does a church in Alabama have? We're going to let you know when we come back from this break. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Not much time left in the first hour. Anna, who's in the second hour today?
I am doing the show with Brett Ehrlich and Kim Horcher today, which I'm super excited about.
I haven't seen Kim on the second hour in a while.
It's been a while. Yeah, it'll be fun.
So none of your TYT lives for this point, but I'll summarize. All of them said JR is awesome.
We'll check that after the break, or the next break. Anyway, let's jump back into the news. As more and more of his advertisers continue to flee on a daily basis, Bill O'Reilly had a surprising announcement on last night's edition of The Factor.
Factor tip of the day, often around this time of year, I grab some vacation because it's spring and Easter time. Last fall, I booked a trip that should be terrific. Not going to tell you where it is, but we have a contest on BillO'Reilly.com. Guess where Bill's going? I'll have a full report when I return. Now, here's a fact tip of the day. If you could possibly take two good trips a year, it'll refresh your life. We all need R&R. Put it to good use. Plan it. Don't run into horror on the road. All of us deserve a break, so make sure you take yours.
Okay, so amidst his sexual harassment scandal and an oncoming investigation by Fox News, he suddenly has a two-week vacation. And I know that when I've actually booked a vacation like 6 months ago, I mention it twice during my announcement. Really?
Yeah. I like how he opened that segment with, I grabbed some vacation.
Oh.
And then weird choice of words.
Yeah. I mean, and it was also in the O'Reilly tip of the day.
Oh, God.
This is just, I don't know, whatever. Look, I think that there is a possibility that he will go away for 2 weeks and people will maybe stop talking about the fact that there have been all of these accusations against him. All of these women were paid huge settlements to the tune of $13 million because of the fact that they alleged that they were sexually harassed by him. I hope that people don't lose sight of what's really going on here. He's been allowed to remain on air, even though all of these cases have come up, even though there was evidence of him sexually harassing one of his associate producers back in 2004, Andrea Macris. There was a recording of him talking about having a shower with her, how he wanted to have a shower with her, how he wanted to rub his loofah all over her, later calling it a falafel. So he's a bad person and has no business being on air, but Fox continues to defend him, pay his settlements, and allow him to thrive in his show.
This is testing the waters. I read also, James Murdoch, son of Rupert, has been trying to get these guys out for a while because he wants to do something different. But this is testing the waters, see if people do forget, if they do carry on, if they
don't.
He's got to make another move, I think.
Just yes or no, will there be more Bill O'Reilly on The O'Reilly Factor after 11 days? Will he have another show, yes or no?
I think he will.
I think so. I think so, too. I know a lot of people are predicting that he's gone, and that will be an amazing day, but I don't think it's going to happen. Anyway, those are our predictions.
Talking Points says yes.
Talking Points says yes. Bill O'Reilly says. Anyway, okay, we got a couple more minutes. Really interesting story we want to close out the hour with. The Alabama Senate just passed a bill that grants the Briarwood Presbyterian Church an amazing new power. The bill would endow the church with the power to, quote, appoint and employ one or more persons to act as police officers, and would give members of the church police department, let's not pass that over too fast, all of the powers of law enforcement officers in this state. Now, why has it come to this? Why does the church get to have its own police department as an individual organization that they control? Well, spokesperson Matt Moore said in a recent statement that they need it. They need their own armed police force to protect its over 4,000 parishioners, as well as its on-site K-12 school and seminary. Well, if that's the precedent, then every mega church around the country will soon have its own armed police officers that it exclusively controls. So get ready for that if this spreads. Eric Johnston, an attorney, says we have to hire policemen all the time. Currently, it would be so much easier to have someone on staff. They apparently have many events, which I'm not surprised to find out. This church has many events every single year. So now they don't have to hire people. They just get to have their own police. Now, a previous version of this same bill made it through the Senate last year, but was never signed. Senate Democrat Hank Sanders says the legislation would likely start an avalanche of private police forces with public authority. And that is going to be the case, unless they say that this is not constitutional, which it certainly seems like it would not be. Opponents of the bill have questioned whether church law enforcement would properly handle illegal activity. There was a drug investigation that took place just 2 years ago at its K-12 school. So if that was their police, would they actually investigate it? Now, another Senate Democrat says he doesn't think that'll be a problem because the church promised it wouldn't be. Oh, okay. Well, as long as they promise. This is a good precedent to set.
This is crazy. I do believe it's unconstitutional. Public money should not go toward any religion. I don't care what your religion is. And I mean, this does set a really bad precedent. If this is allowed to happen in this one church in Alabama, why wouldn't other churches or temples or synagogues or mosques be able to do the exact same thing? Taxpayer money should be used to help people in ways that are not tied to religion, that are not always tied to war, that are not always tied to things that are actually detrimental, yeah, right? And I'm not saying religion is a bad thing. In some cases it is, right, if it's extreme. But I don't want taxpayer money going toward religion. That's against our Constitution.
Yeah.
And so where are all the conservatives who claim to be constitutionalists, who want to protect the Constitution? This goes against the Constitution.
Yeah.
There's so many aspects of this. There's already loose gun laws in Alabama. That's everyone's surprised about that. That you know, you don't have to register your guns, first of all. The background checks, you can transfer possession of assault weapons, 50 caliber rifles, large capacity ammunition magazines. All these things can be just tossed around anyway. So we're gonna trust, as you pointed out, that the congressperson, I said
state senator probably said.
We're just gonna trust them to hire the right kind of people. Even hand out some guns to the right kind of petitioners to make sure that they can shoot up the right people if they come in. There's churches that have historically been attacked. You're gonna start handing out guns to all the black churches. Remember First Emmanuel down in Charleston?
Mm-hmm.
He got shot up. That kid went to the next spot, ready to shoot up something else. Historically, these churches get attacked. Are you ready to hand off guns? Just let them go shooting any white
guy they see walking up?
Because historically, white folks have shot up and burned black churches in this country. Are we gonna start arming them? Are you okay with that?
We'll see. I mean, the first time one of these police officers kills someone, are they gonna be immune from prosecution in the same way that most cops seem to be? That's gonna be a scary precedent. Yeah, we have an establishment clause. We have a separation of church and state. We need to remember that here. This is a terrible precedent. Also, by the way, for you nerds, this is exactly what Cersei Lannister did that started her downfall. But I think that Anna has the solution in it. If you want to stop this, all we need to do is get a mosque in the area with at least 4,000 people to apply for its own police force. That'll be the end of it across the country right there. That's my prediction.
You're already tax exempt, okay?
Yeah, is that not enough?
How about you use that tax exempt status and all the money you save to buy your own security? Why do taxpayers have to foot the bill? That doesn't make any sense at all.
It doesn't make any sense.
Because they're more important than anyone else. Let's just keep it real.
Unfortunately, we do have to end it there. We're gonna take a short little break between the hours. When we come back, whole another second hour coming at you. It's going to be Anna and the return of Brett Ehrlich. I've been seeing him lurking in the control room over there. And also Nerd Alert's Kim Horcher. We haven't seen in the second hour in a while. So that should be exciting. Continue tweeting at hashtag TYT Live. Maybe we can read some of those when we come back from this break.